from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson, in today for Michael Krasny. It's called BioBlitz, a two-day effort by scientists and schoolchildren to catalog the biodiversity of Golden Gate National Parks. We'll talk about what it involves in the next half hour of Forum. And then, she made her living as a nanny, but her passion was photography. Vivian Meyer walked the streets of Chicago capturing extraordinary images, images that no one saw until after she died. Today, she's regarded as a great American photographer whose work is now coming to the Bay Area for the first time. Her story and the BioBlitz, next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson, in today for Michael Krasny. You can think of it as the nature equivalent to March Madness. It's called the BioBlitz, 24 hours of creature counting in Golden Gate National Parks. It's a collaborative effort between the National Park Service, National Geographic, the Golden Gate Parks Conservancy, and the Presidio Trust. The idea is to catalog and count and map as many species as possible, which is no small feat when you consider that just when it comes to birds, half of all northern North America bird species can be found in the 80,000-acre, 91-mile shoreline of the park. Starting tomorrow and continuing through Saturday, inventory teams that include scientists as well as schoolchildren will be keeping track of everything from soaring hawks to microscopic bacteria. We're joined now by two people who are deeply involved in this quest. John Francis, biologist and vice president of research, conservation, and exploration for National Geographic. He started his career by studying seals and sea lions, and he has been putting forth the idea of these BioBlitzes all around the country. John, good morning.
Good morning.
Happy to have you join us. Joining us as well is Alan Fish. He's director of the Golden Gate Raptor Observatory for the Golden Gate National Parks Conservancy. Alan, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
So let's talk about the purpose of this first, John Francis, because this is now, you said, the eighth of these that you've done. What's the point? What is it that you want to try to accomplish?
Well, we at National Geographic are all about inspiring people to care about the planet, and we think everybody is an explorer. And what's happening on this planet is people are becoming increasingly urbanized, and some don't even know they rely on and can enjoy nature in their own backyard. So this is a lot about awakening people's spirits and minds, as well as collaborating with the park system and the Park Service, who are great partners in this endeavor.
And the endeavor is going to include what? There's a lot of people who are going to be out counting over the next 2 days, hundreds of scientists, thousands of school children. Sort of give us the plan of attack.
Well, for the last month or so, people have been able to sign up for inventories and to go out with scientists of their choice, experts on plants, on birds, going up to hawk observatories and so on. Folks who are really the best and most knowledgeable about whatever you're curious about, you could sign up and go out into the wilds with them. And that's going to be happening in the next 2 days. Or you can go to a biodiversity festival where you get to meet your community and learn from scientists and from people firsthand about the wonders of nature.
Now, the signups for the collection you're already set. The registration is closed for those, but you can still come and be part of the Biodiversity Festival, where you'll also see this data coming in, right? You're going to be sort of collating and collecting, and you're going to be learning how many hawks are out there and how many of this and how many of that?
Right. So there's you can actually text in to find out what the latest count is. It really starts building at the last couple of hours. So by noon on Saturday, we'll have our closure.
It's like a public radio pledge drive.
My God, it's like, and you don't know what you're going to find. A lot of people have a sense, but the fact is everybody, you don't have to be in an inventory. You can download an app that's called iNaturalist, and you can load up your own scientific observations wherever you are in these parks and become part of the count. It goes right into National Park's species list.
We'll come back to that, and I'll ask you to jot down perhaps what that app is or how we can find out more. But let's wander up Hawk Hill for a moment, Alan, and tell us what you're part of this. So you're going to be doing what over the next 2 days?
Well, I'm part of the National Park Service and Conservancy staff, so I have the luxury of getting to be one of the MC/biologists sitting up on top of Hawk Hill, which is the 900-foot hill right in the middle of the Golden Gate on the Marin side. We have the biggest annual fall migration of birds of prey in the fall. We also get a spring migration of raptors and other birds going by. It's a great front seat, as it were, to see the migratory activities of not just birds, but bugs and dragonflies and marine mammals and a variety of animals going by.
So now, do you divide up by species? I mean, are you like the hawk guy, and then there's the crow guy or whatever? I mean, how does this
work? Well, a lot of us bird people can do most of the birds, but frankly, we have the easy job because we have the most field guides and the most sort of amateur backup. But the exciting thing is to bring in a lot of people. The taxonomic, the nature talent pool that's coming in, the scientists, hundreds of scientists from all over Northern California coming in for this is really one of the exciting things for me, is getting to meet heroes from many years of study from other taxonomic areas and getting to see how they do their art and do their skill and getting to be shoulder to shoulder with them.
So tell us something about how this works, because it seems like it would be challenging, actually, to sort of be literally counting. I mean, are you counting numbers of how many hawks, or are you counting numbers of species? So you're counting, you know, turkey vultures plus hawks plus whatever.
Yeah, the focal point for the Blitz is really a species count, to pull a number of species in and see what the biodiversity of this region is. And it's a great testimony to National Geographic that they've looked to the GGNRA as an urban national park, where you might think normally this isn't the place you'd see a lot of species. But in fact, with the edge of urban activity, with the multiple habitats that we have here, and of course the ocean bay edge, make for great diversity of species coming by. This really won't be a quantification of numbers of animals. That might be a byproduct, but John can speak more about that. But it really is a species celebration, as it were.
The BioBlitz takes place, and the Biodiversity Festival all across various parts of the Golden Gate parks, and we'll tell you specifically where you can head, but it's taking place everywhere from Muir Woods to Crissy Field. And if you have questions about it or interested in it, would like to know more about how you count hawks, you can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or you can email in your questions at forum@kqed.org or post them on our Facebook page. So, John Francis, step back for a moment and tell us, I mean, this sounds like great fun, but there's more to it, of course. Why is this important to do? What is it that can be learned from this? Or what do you hope people will take away from this next 48 hours?
Well, what amazes me and what's troubling, as I indicated, is people are increasingly urbanized. When we were in Santa Monica Mountain on the second BioBlitz that we held, we had some kids huddled and screaming thank you to their guides down at Malibu Lagoon, only to learn that half of them had never had their feet in the ocean. These are kids from the LA Unified School District. And this is happening around the world, you know, that kids don't even have a clue that they depend upon the natural fabric of our planet to be whole, and also that there's great wonder and excitement in exploring it. So that's a huge educational opportunity, but it goes even to adults. And so the whole idea is to open doors and make people really excited about looking after what's so precious on this planet.
So, I mean, in a very basic sense, you're hoping that kids will, instead of looking at their screens, will look up at the sky, right?
What's interesting, though, it's not screens or nature, because, as you know, I'm suggesting, you can actually take your phone out to nature. And once you have a name, and I did this on my porch in my, you know, front porch in Silver Spring, Maryland, I found something I didn't know. I thought it was a moth, took a picture, loaded it up, and in another hour, I had the identity of that moth. It wasn't a moth. It was a skipper butterfly. I had the species. I could learn about it. And once you have the name, the whole kind of encyclopedia opens.
So that's interesting. I mean, so part of what you're really helping, rather than I was trying to kind of conveniently class one activity versus another, but what you're really saying is this is an opportunity to merge kids' natural interests in all things electronic with all things that are natural and figuring out a way that they can complement each other.
Not only that, but there's software that's called Citizen Sort where you can have people in the kids in the cloud sort moths photos that then the experts can glean the new species, the invasive species location. All these things are now available through the web-served opportunity. So the next generation of taxonomists, of specialists, has yet to be born, and we want to help those people come to the fore.
Are there things that we should be concerned about as people who are worried about the sort of state of the environment overall? We obviously have all been going through great angst about climate change and this year's drought. Alan Fish, give us your sort of snapshot view of the health of the Golden Gate Parks and of the diversity that's there. Are there warning signs? Is there the proverbial sort of, you know, canary in the coal mine that we should be worried about? Or are things looking pretty good right now in terms of whether it's hawks or any other species?
Well, we're extremely lucky in the Bay Area that we have an incredible reservoir of protected lands that frankly don't look like they'll be challenged so much at their boundaries as they'll be challenged by we might love them to death. And the danger we have in an urban area is too much human activity over too much of the parks too much of the time. And that's a lot, frankly, for a small body of rangers to be able to defend against. And there's a lot of legal mandates that we actually have to abide by in order to protect the animal species, even in these urban parks. So that urban edge can be a little bit dicey. But for the most part, we have some tremendous success stories. One of the exciting things that the Conservancy and Park Service has done in the last few years is to completely restore the mouth of Redwood Creek at Muir Beach, turning it into a opportunity for coho salmon to spawn as they have for millions of years, and to do it in a natural setting instead of dealing with a pavement parking lot and a variety of obstacles and chemical problems that have been there for the last 80 years. So some restoration work right now that's state of the art in our national parks that we can be very proud of.
Are you also going to be counting things that shouldn't be there? I mean, there's the perennial debate over, you know, whether it's eucalyptus, you know, on near Crissy Field or whatever it happens to be that there shouldn't be. Do you count what ought to be there as well as what ought not?
Well, it all shows up. And in the next 10 or so years, we hope that when people file that photograph of something, they'll have a reference material on their phone that will say this one shouldn't be here or this one has never been seen here. But for example, there's a really cool study that's going to be happening on fouling organisms in the bay that these, boats, piers, whatever, are struck by invasives. And we're going to be looking at some scientists who have signed up are going to be looking at the aquatic invasives. And I'm sure there will be all kinds of – somebody just took a picture of pampas grass, for example, in an outing before the Blitz that is introduced from South America. They're all over, and we have to keep track of those.
John Francis, biologist, vice president of research, conservation, and exploration at National Geographic, joining us along with Alan Fish, director of the Golden Gate Raptor Observatory as part of Golden Gate National Parks Conservancy. We'd love to hear from you as well. What are species that you're interested in going out and seeing and counting over the next 2 days as part of the BioBlitz? What's been perhaps your favorite sighting? What's something that you've seen at, whether it's at Golden Gate National Parks or elsewhere along the coast, that was striking to you, that changed you in some ways, perhaps? Join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. You mentioned that story in the beginning, John, about kids from LA Unified coming out and dipping their toes in the ocean for the first time. Who are some of the kids who are coming tomorrow? Is it an analogous situation, kids from San Francisco Unified who may not have had the opportunity to see a redwood perhaps before and are now going to get to go to Muir Woods?
So we have a total now of 2,500 students signed up. 1,400 are from San Francisco Unified, others from San Mateo and Marin counties. We also had a really cool schoolyard BioBlitz before this up in the Fresno area. It was John Muir Middle School in Corcoran, and they're actually looking at what's in their backyard. That's the killer app for me, is to get every school to start rewilding their schoolyard, and then having every year a revisitation of what's there and see if they can actually enrich and make more native their backyard at the school.
I love that term, rewilding. Tell me more about what that means.
Well, it's an idea that's been growing in Europe and is moving into the U.S. The idea that you can know what existed before a lot of human impact. You can, to some extent, try to recreate, especially corridors where animals are right now blocked from movement. You know, the hawks manage to make it from one point to another, but they have to stop and feed. Some of these animals can't even get past the fences. If you look at pronghorns, for example.
This reminds me, I'm sorry to say, I can't remember the name of the photographer, but a wonderful book came out maybe 10 years ago that was called, it was about refotography of Yosemite in particular, looking at taking pictures from the exact same vantage point, a picture that was perhaps taken by Ansel Adams, let's say, and then taking it again, decades and decades later, as a way of measuring change and sort of what has evolved in that. It's a really, really interesting concept. Let's go to some of our callers who want to join our conversation. Paul in San Mateo. Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, since this is kind of longitudinal and biodiversity, what are some of the trends in terms of, are you seeing species disappearing? Are you seeing more invasive species? Like, what have you found over the years?
So the question is, what have we heard in terms of what have we seen as things were evolving? We're having a little bit of trouble getting your question in. So why don't you repeat it once more, if you would, Noah, and we'll make sure we get your question.
Yeah, just over the years, what are the trends of species you've seen appearing, disappearing, that kind of thing?
Okay, trends in terms of species appearing and disappearing.
Yes. Yeah,
I'll comment first. You know, we're talking about us going through the sixth major extinction on the planet. Human impact is diminishing biodiversity at alarming rates. Right now, we know 2 million species. We've named 2 million. The estimates are now close to 8.7 million, as much as 100 million species. The rate of discovery of new species is like 18,000 a year. We're never going to, in 100 years, identify and count what's happening. And at the same time, we're losing them at alarming rates. So it's one of these struggles where you might identify a new drug from a tree, and this happened. They go back to study the tree, and there's a stump. And the only place they found this tree actually was in a botanical reserve. So we're facing some very stark problems right now.
And what about here? Are there particular things that you're worried about, Alan, in Golden Gates in particular? Are there species that are fragile?
Yeah, the GGNRA is a fascinating place. We have something like 40 threatened and endangered species between the plants and animals, and some of which there's one famous plant that's down to one individual organism, one plant left. So the Park Service's stewardship of these lands and community stewardship have been tremendously important to keep the directional trends moving in the right direction.
But say that again. We're down to one plant.
There's one plant, of a manzanita called the Raven's Manzanita in the Presidio, and I can't tell you where it is. Frankly, I don't know either. But
just to sort of use that as an icon for this question. So what's significant about that? What's lost if we lose that last manzanita?
Well, as John kind of alluded to this, that you have a potential story on a sort of practical human scale of chemical use or a medicine that might be possible that we really haven't done the biochemistry of, we don't know anything about. And on a larger ethical story, there's a question of these plants evolved to resolve a certain function or gap or vacuum in nature. And we know very little about those vacuums and activities as well.
So part of what might be potentially exciting would be, if you found another, of course, of these manzanitas, but if you learned that maybe something was coming back, is that part of what the potential of something like this is, that you can see perhaps something, even though it's not ever going to replace the rate at which you were describing, but could point the way to some promising possibilities
as well? One of the exciting things that we're able to do now is to look at range expansions and movements of populations. So it's sometimes it's not a new species, but rather where you find it. And we have these parks and we have a sense that if you protect them, then everything's fine. But then the world is entirely a garden, and our climate change is having species disappear and appear depending on climate change. So that whole movement and how quickly and whether there's resilience is buried in this tracking effort that we all can do as citizen scientists.
Susie in Pacifica has a question or an observation. Susie, go ahead.
Hi. My observation is actually about the night sky inventory that is also going on in the BioBlitz. I work for the Astronomical Society of the Pacific, and we were contacted by the National Parks Night Sky team to help them find volunteers to actually document the quality of the night sky in this large transect. They went from point rays all the way down to pinnacles, and we got a bunch of the amateur astronomy clubs to go out and use these sky quality meters that will take a reading on how dark the skies are.
All right. Let me hold you there, Susie, just because your line's breaking up a bit and we're a bit short on time. So night sky, Alan Fish, what can you learn from that?
I have to say it's very exciting to see the creative range that BioBlitz has encompassed and the Park Service's interest, of course, in thinking about not just something immediate like a plant or an animal species, but the quality of the air around us in these urban zones that's going to impinge directly on these ecological systems. And it's very exciting to see the enthusiasm from skilled amateurs that are coming out to measure and remeasure. And as John put it, it's an opportunity to put a line in the sand, a mark in the sand that can be actually rechecked in a year or 10 years or 20.
And while it's not quite all the way to the sky, you're also going to be up in the redwoods, right, surveying what's going on in the canopy of the redwoods and Muir Woods?
It's very exciting because we have someone who's a National Geographic grantee, Steve Sillett, who's going to be in Muir Woods climbing up and evaluating what's in the canopies. And getting up there is not an easy task. You know, there are only a few people that are skilled enough to do that. He's also looking for the tallest tree in that particular stand. The majesty of the biggest plant on the planet is something that you can't ignore, but the fact that we really don't know clearly what goes on at the very top, you know, there's still a ton to explore in the biodiversity on this planet.
Let's go to Andy next with a quick last call. Andy, go ahead, please, with your observation.
Hi, I paddle my kayak around the Golden Gate, and over the past couple of years, I've seen small groups of dark porpoises, and I'm wondering, are there more than one type of porpoise in the Bay Area?
Andy, thanks for the call. More than one type of porpoise? What do we know about that? Is that something you'll actually be trying to count over the next 48 hours?
Well, Alan's seen a lot more than I have. I used to do a little blue whale work offshore here, but the harbor porpoise is probably what he's talking about. And you also see a bottlenose dolphin. I don't know, Alan, if you'd add more.
Yeah, absolutely increasing. We get to see some of that from Hawk Hill looking down at the Golden Gate. But there will be a program. I'm not sure if it's a program or if our local cetacean group led by Bill Keener will actually be working on that for the BioBlitz. But we have documented a lot more porpoises around. It's very, very exciting to see them close to shore.
Andy, thanks for the call. We are about out of time, unfortunately. So let's give people as much as we can in terms of what they can do still tomorrow, John Francis, because what would you like people to do? How can they get engaged? What will they see when they get out there?
So,
and where should they come?
If you haven't signed up for an inventory, come down to Crissy Field. There's a biodiversity festival that goes 2 days. The exhibits are incredible. Learn from National Geographic photographers on how to shoot images. Learn from experts in raptors. We have an onstage show there. Lots of great music, art. All the partners in the Bay Area that care about these things are going to be there for you to talk to.
And you should actually bring your phone, right? Because you can use
bring your phone, download iNaturalist. It's a great app that makes you your own explorer.
John Francis, biologist, vice president of research, conservation, and exploration at National Geographic. Thanks. Good luck. Hope this goes terrifically well. Alan Fish, director of the Golden Gate Raptor Observatory. Thanks as well.
Thank you.
Good luck counting up on Hawk Hill. Sounds like great fun. This is Forum on KQED.